I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. Seattle's new socialist mayor wasting no time stopping the sweeps of homeless encampments. Plus, President Trump considering the Insurrection Act in Minnesota while his administration renews threats against sanctuary jurisdictions like Seattle. And two new bills attacking the initiative process in Washington state. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. A ton to get to today. I want to start in the city of Seattle with the new socialist mayor. We shouldn't be surprised that one of her first acts just a few days on the job is to put a halt to the sweeps of homeless encampments. Now, this is very disturbing and it's going to have profound impacts on the city and a lot of other things, especially during the World Cup year where we're supposed to believe that the city is getting itself in tip-top shape so soccer fans from around the world can come here and enjoy the city. That's not going to happen. I mean, they're going to come here, but they're not going to enjoy the city. I can promise you that. But it's not a surprise that she's putting a halt on some of the sweeps of homeless encampments because she's always been a stop the sweeps sort of person. And you have these whole left-wing activists in Seattle who go out and try to interfere, have in the past, with the city coming in and clearing out homeless encampments, even when the homeless encampments are in dangerous places. Even when the homeless encampments have been places where people have been shot or overdosed and died in tents, they don't care. They literally want these people to continue to live in filth and squalor in these dangerous, deadly conditions, which is toxic empathy. It's not empathy at all. And then during the campaign between Katie Wilson and Bruce Harrell, she was asked straight away, are you okay with people just living in tents and parks?
Should homeless people be allowed to stay in tents in parks, Mayor Harrell?
No.
Candidate Wilson.
This is hard for a yes or no question.
No, it's not.
I'm going to pass on this one.
Of course she's going to pass. And why do you think she's passing on it? Because she wants to say yes, but at the time, you know, she was trying to appear more reasonable and not some crazy socialist slash communist. But she's okay with people sleeping in tents in parks, which is so in conflict with all these flowery speeches she's been giving. Remember them where she's talking about, oh, I want our kids to run in our parks with abandon. And I want people, she literally said this stuff, to be able to sit and daydream in the park and lay in the grass and look up at the sky. Okay, nobody's going to do any of that stuff if the parks are filled with homeless drug addicts. They're just not. But she's already stopping a scheduled sweep of a park, homeless camp, in a park in Seattle, in the Ballard neighborhood, that has gotten just absolutely disgusting. And you can tell, when you look at any of these parks, you can immediately tell how long it's been there. I mean, they have all of these, you see the concrete barriers in there that are owned by taxpayers, right? It's usually Department of Transportation, whatever it is. They have them all around and then they're all graffitied and spray painted. I mean, this is a park that's been festering and the Ballard neighborhood wants it gone. People are like, this is absolutely ridiculous. It's right along this popular trail, the Burke Gilman Trail. And it's just ballooned in size since Mayor Wilson won the election because people knew that she wasn't going to come in and sweep encampments, and the homeless people know too. So she comes out, this is scheduled to be swept. She comes out and says, no, we're not going to sweep it. She put out a statement, and the statement in and of itself, I will say there's some valid points in here, but let's read it and we'll discuss. She said, this morning I visited the site of an encampment in Ballard that was scheduled to be removed because I wanted to understand in detail for myself what's working and not working in our current approach. I decided to extend the deadline for this site to allow more time to assess whether we can improve outcomes for the people living there, for their neighbors, and for local businesses. Meaningful progress on homelessness means finding solutions that bring more people inside instead of moving them from place to place. That's why my administration will soon be announcing concrete steps to expedite the expansion of emergency shelter and will move quickly to open new shelter space. We also need to provide clean and accessible sidewalks, parks, trails, and other public spaces for everyone to enjoy. Sometimes that will require clearing encampments, and the city will pursue that course when it's the best option. For too long, we have spent too much time and too many resources on approaches that have not been successful at addressing our homeless crisis, and it's time for that to change. Now, I agree with some of that. Just sweeping people from place to place, one day they're in this park blocking this trail, the next day they're in this park, doing that has not worked in any sort of long-term capacity. But we've also tried this approach of leaving them in place, and that doesn't work either. And it is true that under Mayor Bruce Harrell, although he wasn't perfect, his decision not to let camps fester did make a difference. Because he's basically saying, no, you can't make yourself so comfortable in a city park that you have enough time to build a three-story structure out of crap you find in the garbage. Yes, that actually happened. So you allow these people to be there for like a year, and they make themselves at home. And they feel like Seattle is a place where they can just come and do drugs and be homeless on the streets, and there's not going to be any consequence. And I would also say, so I agree that we have to find a solution that is, you know, getting these people off the streets. But you see what she's focusing on in her solution. The same broken solution that our state has been putting forth in a long time. Shelter. Shelter is not going to fix this. Shelter is not the problem. Not having an apartment or a house is not the problem. What's the problem? Come on. What's the problem, people? Drugs and mental illness. So she says she's going to stand up more rapid shelter. Is this going to be shelter that comes along with a requirement that you get help for the underlying reason that you were homeless? I don't think she has the cojones to do that. Because that's mean. Oh, we can't make it a requirement that someone actually gets help for their drug addiction in order for them to get an apartment or eventually a house or whatever it is. And that's where it fails. Because Katie, you can take them out of this encampment and you can put them in a shelter. But if they are still allowed to do drugs in the shelter, which many of the shelters they can, if they're still allowed to do drugs, they're going to have the same issues. They're just going to have a temporary shelter over their head. That's absolutely wild. Our friend Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle, after she heard the news that the mayor was not going to sweep this particular encampment, and it's not just going to be this one, it's going to be all sorts of encampments that are going to continue to grow and grow and grow under this mayor. She went out there and kind of showed how bad this encampment has gotten and gave some of her thoughts.
This, from my perspective, will be a tragedy if these camps continue to stay. They are open air drug scenes. I can hear the foil now. I can hear the clicking of torches. There's squalid living conditions. There's rodents. It's right here on the bike trail with people on illegal drugs. It's a ticking time bomb for the community, whether it's fires, crime, assaults, theft of all kinds. This is a constellation of bad things to come if these camps are left unresolved.
Yeah, and as she points out, every single day that the mayor allows that camp to remain there where people are just engaged in substance abuse is another day that someone has an opportunity to die in filth and squalor in one of the richest cities in America. And it's another day where one of the hikers or the bikers or the joggers who are going by on the trail have an opportunity to get shot, stabbed, assaulted, raped, whatever it is. And the city has a duty there. That's like a baseline obligation, is public safety. And for Katie Wilson, I mean, you ran to be mayor, and one of the most significant problems in the city is homelessness. So you're telling me you now need to assess what the city's response to homelessness has been and how it can be improved? How have you not been assessing that plan and coming? If you're running for mayor in a city like Seattle, you should have a plan the second that you decide to run for office to address one of the biggest challenges. Now, I will give her credit. As opposed to just dictating from the mount, from the seventh floor of City Hall and saying, no, we're not going to sweep this homeless encampment, I will absolutely give Katie Wilson credit that she went out there in person. Andrea Suarez was there as well.
We're going to do the very best we can. We all know that we need a lot more shelter, a lot more housing.
I'm very optimistic that our new mayor came out here, boots on the ground, to see firsthand what's going on.
They will be swept, but when it happens, let's make sure that they don't go over back to Fred Meyer.
Sure, there was two schools of thought out here this morning. The housing first, housing with no requirement for treatment, mental health care, to get a job. The other camp was here saying treatment before housing, or treatment required when you get housing. And that would be the camp of We Heart Seattle and many advocates in the recovery community that say when their life was saved, it was because treatment was mandated, law enforcement was involved, courts were involved.
We have many treatment boats available. We have detox available.
Unfortunately, when we tried to offer our school of thought, the mayor turned her head away and didn't seem curious whatsoever.
Yep, she's not going to do that. She's not going to do that. Oh, that's mean. We don't care. They're totally all in for substance abuse. All in for decriminalization of drugs. All in for letting people kill themselves in tents in the city. And make the city just a blight. And you see it. She looks away. They don't want to hurt. They never want to hear these progressives and socialists from We Heart Seattle, the one organization that knows better than anyone else what's happening on the streets and what's happening in these encampments. And so, you know, yes, I can give Mayor Wilson credit for going out to the encampment for herself, for saying the truth that sweeping people from place to place isn't a long-term solution by any means. But what else is she bringing to the table? And you're really telling me you weren't prepared to deal with this issue on day one? Shouldn't be a surprise, though. She's really never had a job in her life. I'm not surprised that the Nepo baby, who has no qualifications to be mayor, didn't have a plan to deal with the city's most pressing crisis. And in the meantime, what are state lawmakers doing down in Olympia? They are already busy at work trying to re-up a bill that didn't get across the finish line last year that would do what? Would give lawmakers in Olympia control over when local jurisdictions can and cannot sweep homeless encampments. Because what do they want? Well, the progressives in Olympia want everyone to take the Seattle approach. So this is House Bill 2489. You're going to hear a lot about that on the show this year. It has to do with, quote, establishing statewide standards for when local governments may enforce laws regulating the use of public space for life-sustaining activities. So they're basically saying that we want a state-level mandate and restrictions and requirements before any city in the state can sweep homeless encampments. And what are they going to do? They say in here, laws and policies that punish people who are homeless for engaging in necessary life-sustaining activities in public places inflict harm on already vulnerable individuals, exacerbates barriers to stability, and undermines pathways to housing. What the hell are they talking about engaging in necessary life-sustaining activities? Like peeing and shitting? Is that what necessary life-sustaining activity is a homeless person engaged in that you're trying to say cities can't criminalize? I mean, sleeping, I guess you could say. I guess that is a necessary life-sustaining activity. So you're saying that they can't enforce no sit, no lie ordinances, which there are a lot of cities, even Democrat-run cities in our state, that have no sit, no lie ordinances. So what the state lawmakers are saying is they basically want a rule that a city, any city, red city, blue city, west side of the state, east side of the state, you can't stop someone from doing something that's necessary to living on the streets. So you can't stop them from peeing, can't stop them from crapping, can't stop them from sleeping, can't stop them from breathing on the streets. So now there's no rules. It's a total free-for-all. It's like you know what they do? They want the homeless crisis to get worse. Why do they want the homeless crisis to get worse? Because it brings in so much money to their cronies and allies and all of these NGOs that just get rich off of it and have no motivation whatsoever to fix it. Because then the gravy train stops of taxpayer funds. Crazy, crazy. All right, I want to talk about sanctuary jurisdictions. I was thinking over scenarios last night. I feel like the turning point, I hate to even speak this into existence because I don't want it to happen, but we have some of these Democrat-run states and cities that are basically threatening ICE, right? That are threatening to put them in handcuffs, to arrest them and prosecute them for carrying out lawful immigration efforts. And I feel like that is going to be like the turning point to a possible civil war in our country. What's going to happen is one of these states like Minnesota is going to go out, serve a warrant, arrest an ICE agent for doing their job and refuse to release them from jail. And stuff is going to hit the fan. I just really think that's the scenario that we're heading toward. And there's all of this rhetoric that is just ratcheting up in Washington state. We know during his State of the State address yesterday, Governor Bob Ferguson said this.
We need to be direct about what is happening in our country and our state with ICE. It's horrific. It's unjust, and it needs to stop now.
Used no nuance whatsoever to lower the temperature. Didn't say, hey, if they're, you know, carrying out federal law lawfully and they're getting violent people off the streets, no problem with that. But I do have a problem with XYZ. No nuance whatsoever to ratcheting up the rhetoric during a very, very precarious time for our country. And then Katie Wilson, the socialist mayor of Seattle, releasing this video.
I am furious at the federal government's abuse of power. It is unacceptable to kidnap people who are simply going about their lives. There is no place for this in Seattle.
Yep, kidnapping. Again, no nuance whatsoever. Doesn't matter if it's the pedophile who's been slinging drugs to people who kill themselves down on 3 and Pine that ICE scoops up and takes off our street, which is a benefit to everyone. Nope, kidnapping someone, it's kidnapping someone. President Trump is reiterating threats to hold federal money to sanctuary jurisdictions and to the states that house sanctuary cities. Says President, this is from the AP. President Trump said Tuesday that starting February 1st, so 15 days from now, he will deny federal funding to any states that are home to local governments resisting his administration's immigration policies, expanding on previous threats to cut off resources to the so-called sanctuary cities themselves. Such an action could have far-reaching impacts across the U.S., potentially even in places that aren't particularly friendly to non-citizens. But then they do point out that 2 previous efforts by Trump to cut off some funding for sanctuary jurisdictions were shut down by the courts. So whether this is another empty threat that they can't actually carry out, I think remains to be seen. Caroline Levitt just this morning had a White House press briefing, and she talked about growing frustration over sanctuary jurisdictions.
And it's truly shameful that now for more than a year, you've had elected Democrat governors and mayors who have basically held their state and local law enforcement hostage and told them, you cannot cooperate with federal law enforcement. Why? They cooperated under the Biden administration. It's because these Democrats are deranged in their hatred for President Trump, and they are holding their state and local law enforcement hostage as a result. And these Democrat mayors and governors are doing this over what? Over the lawful and legitimate law enforcement operations to remove violent criminals from the streets of Minnesota, from the streets of California, from the streets of New York, and from the streets of every state across this country. And you don't see these riots and this vandalism taking place in states like Florida. Why? Because you have a governor in that state who has empowered federal and local authorities to work together. And it's despicable what we're seeing from these Democrat politicians, especially in sanctuary states and cities across the country.
Yeah. Yes, you did hear a baby crying in the background. It will become apparent why just momentarily. But for any of you, we're like, is that a baby crying? Yes, it is. One thing I'll correct with her is our state didn't cooperate with federal agents during the Biden administration either, but they didn't go unhinged over it. I mean, Biden was carrying out deportations in our state. Biden was carrying out lawful immigration efforts. I mean, he was also allowing millions of people to come across the southern border and then deporting some of them. But we had our sanctuary policy in place in the state of Washington at the time, which prohibited this coordination or cooperation. But our elected leaders just kind of shut up about it. They weren't like, Biden's, you know, kidnapping people off the streets or whatever it is. So it's totally ridiculous. So I don't know what the federal government is going to be able to do at this point to sanctuary jurisdictions. However, there might be one tool in the toolkit that they haven't been willing to pull out quite yet. But if it's going to be pulled out anywhere, it's going to be pulled out in Minnesota. The scenes out of Minnesota last night were insane. Reminded me a lot of a riot I got caught in the middle of in Seattle in 2020 in the lead up to Chaz Chop. So this is video from Nick Sorter, who's on the ground. These federal agents had to abandon their vehicles because they were surrounded by these rioters. And so what did the rioters do? Well, they started to loot them. And that's them hooking a tow strap up to a safe, a weapons safe that was in the back of one of these federal vehicles, and then surrounding it to try to get it open. They were also pulling out documents from these vehicles, sharing information from those documents on live streams that had the full names of agents, of judges that they needed to call for warrants, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it reminded me of in Seattle when they were lighting cop cars on fire and pulling out the assault weapons, so-called assault weapons, from the back of them and firing them back into the car. And my security guard had to go disarm the rioters of stolen police rifles. So now you have a situation that's totally out of control. It was out of control in Minnesota, but this is next level. Ransacking, taking weapons, taking documents that could have detailed information about immigration, federal immigration operations, sharing that information publicly. The question is it an insurrection? Should President Trump enact the Insurrection Act? And then you have Walz, the governor of Minnesota, who continues. He already said we're at war with the federal government, and he continues to encourage this sort of behavior.
But as bad as it's been, Donald Trump intends for it to get worse. This week, he went online to promise that, quote, the day of retribution and reckoning is coming. That's a direct threat against the people of this state who dared to vote against him three times and who continue to stand up for freedom with courage and empathy and profound grace. All across Minnesota, people are stepping up to help their neighbors who are being unjustly and unlawfully targeted. Donald Trump wants this chaos. He wants confusion. And yes, he wants more violence on our streets. Tonight, I want to share another way you can help. Witness. Help us establish a record of exactly what's happening in our communities. You have an absolute right to peacefully film ICE agents as they conduct these activities. So carry your phone with you at all times. And if you see these ICE agents in your neighborhood, take out that phone and hit record. We will remain an island of decency, of justice, of community, of peace. And tonight I come before you simply to ask, don't let anyone take that away from us.
So I agree that you have a right to basically film anything that's happening in a public place, but he knows what that's going to lead to. He knows what that has led to. Confrontations. I mean, it led to an ICE agent having to shoot a woman who was trying to block them, and they were all trying to document what ICE was doing. So that, combined with all his other rhetoric, it leads to the question about, is it time for the president to invoke the Insurrection Act, which would allow him to bring troops into Minnesota to protect ICE agents as they go about trying to continue to do their jobs and to try to protect them from being swarmed by these mobs. He suggested, he's thinking about it. He had a post on Truth Social. If the corrupt politicians of Minnesota don't obey the law and stop the professional agitators and insurrectionists from attacking the patriots of ICE, who are only trying to do their jobs, I will institute the Insurrection Act, which many presidents have done before me, and quickly put an end to the travesty that is taking place in that once great state. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President Trump. Caroline Levitt, at her press briefing this morning, was asked about what it might take for the president to do that.
I'm wondering what his tipping point is. Like, what would it take for him to invoke the Insurrection Act?
Look, that's only a question, frankly, Reagan, the president can answer. But the Insurrection Act is a tool at the president's disposal. As you know, it has been used sparingly, but it has been used by previous presidents in American history. And I think the president's Truth Social post spoke very loud and clear to Democrats across this country, elected officials who are using their platforms to encourage violence against federal law enforcement officers, who are encouraging left-wing agitators to unlawfully obstruct legitimate law enforcement operations.
And I'll say it, what's happening and has been happening as it pertains to ICE activity and the pushback against it is far worse than January 6th. It's far worse. And you will not find one video clip of me condoning what happened on January 6th, 2021. But, you know, and people will say, when I tried to compare, and was one of the reasons I quit my TV news job, is the comparison in the media coverage of the riots that happened throughout 2020. And the media being like, no big deal. And Democrats being like, no big deal. And then the comparison to their response and coverage of J6. And I thought, what? It's political violence is political violence. Can't we just condemn it in all its forms? And they would say, invariably, it would be, oh, well, this is different. They were trying to overthrow essentially a duly elected government and the results of an election. They were attacking our democracy. How is what they're doing right now any different than that? They are trying to actively stop the president of the United States from carrying out the mandate that he got from voters. He ran on this. He ran on doing this. He won by running on doing this. And now across the country, they're trying to stop the president of the United States from enforcing federal law. So if you're mad about J6, how could you not be mad about this? Oh, because everybody's a freaking hypocrite these days. Nobody can be morally consistent on anything. And if we're being honest with ourselves, The acts of violence and vandalism month after month after month are far more serious and widespread than anything that happened on January 6th. But it's like we have totally lost our minds. And so, I mean, I got to start lifting weights more. I have to start, I don't know, because I need to not be useless in the Civil War. I hate to put that out there, but I just don't see any of this ending any other way. And I don't want to be deemed completely useless. So I got to buff up or something. I got to work on I got to become useful in something during the Civil War. Just wild. All right. The feds also saying that they're going to take increased steps toward investigating schools across the country that are letting boys compete against girls. They've threatened that before. Is something actually going to happen? We'll discuss. First, are you concerned about the tech bubble, the AI bubble? Do those even exist? How is AI going to impact the future of your retirement portfolio and its strength? Well, if you have questions about any of that, join Bulwark Capital's Zach Abraham for his New Year Reset free live webinar, January 29th, 3:30 p.m. Pacific. You can register right now at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Zach will discuss the impact AI could have on the 2026 market, how Bulwark is focused on risk management, and how they incorporate value-based principles in managing retirement portfolios. Plus, he'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and of course, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So register for that free live webinar. Again, it's happening January 29th. And while you're at knowyourriskpodcast.com, subscribe to Zach's daily market recap, knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. Okay, the U.S. Department of Education announces that it is launching civil rights investigations into 18 different school districts across the country. Four of them are here in Washington State. Cheney Public Schools. Is it Cheney or Cheney? It's Cheney. Okay. Sometimes I get stuff wrong. Salton School District, Tacoma Public Schools, and Vancouver Public Schools. It says the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights initiated investigations into 18 educational entities in 10 states based on complaints submitted to our office alleging that they have violated Title IX. The complaints assert that these entities, which range from K through 12 school districts to post-secondary education institutions to state departments of education, maintain policies or practices that discriminate on the basis of sex by permitting students to participate in sports based on their gender identity, not biological sex. These policies jeopardize both the safety and the equal opportunities of women in educational programs and activities. Now, here's what I'm confused about, though. So you see that list, and as they noted there, One of the entities they're investigating is the Hawaii State Department of Education and the New York City Department of Education. So some of these, like Hawaii, that's the whole state. So they're investigating the entire State Department of Education in the state of Hawaii. Why would they not do that here as well? Because they list out these public school districts in our state, Cheney, Salton, Tacoma, Vancouver, but in truth, every single school district in our state is allowing boys to compete against girls because that's the dictate from the state and from the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. So really, they should be investigating. And I don't even know if it's the fault of some of these school districts. Now, maybe, and it sounds like they got complaints, right? So people complain specifically. So it's possible that there are transgender athletes actually at those schools who are being allowed to participate. And that's why there's this specificity there. But again, Hawaii State Department of Education, I feel like they could easily do a civil rights investigation into the entire Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, because we know specifically of other schools, like the Shelton School District had a trans athlete that was competing. Other school districts have as well. So I continue to be in this sort of wait and see posture with the federal government on so many things, because they threatened schools way back when President Trump started his second term about allowing boys to compete against girls. And nothing really came of that. So we'll wait and see what comes of this. But ultimately, hopefully, this is something that the United States Supreme Court is going to come down and decide on. But there's a clip I want to play you. And I'm sorry, we have a lot from Caroline Leavitt's press briefing this morning, but she talked about so many things that are relevant to our state. So Riley Gaines was there. Of course, you know, Riley Gaines, who's been one of the key voices in protecting girls' sports. It was her baby who was crying in the clip earlier that I played. She has a new baby that she brought to the press briefing. But she had a good question of Caroline Leavitt, and that is that even if the United States Supreme Court rules in favor of these red states who've banned boys from competing against girls, that ruling wouldn't really do anything for states like ours who have no intention of implementing such a ban. So here's the question and answer.
If the Supreme Court rules as anticipated in favor of maintaining these sex-based rights, is the administration prepared to take action against the states? I believe at this point it's 23 states that don't have those protections for women?
Absolutely. And as you know, Riley, the administration already has done so. We've taken action in a number of fronts against these states who are failing to uphold the president's executive orders and this administration's policy of simply protecting women in women's sports and in women's private spaces. We've gone to the mat with large universities in this country as well to try to fight for what's fair and what's just for women and girls across the country. So I know you were at the arguments. I listened to them myself as a woman and as a former athlete, and I think the president speaks on common sense on this issue, that women's sports and private spaces should be protected, and that there are two genders, there are two sexes. That is not something we should be afraid to say in this country. And I think, frankly, it was quite alarming to not only hear a couple of justices gravel over that basic fundamental biological fact that men and women are different but inherently equal, but we are certainly different and women deserve such rights. We hope and expect that the Supreme Court will rule in the right way on this matter.
Yeah, but I don't, our state won't do anything unless it's forced to do something. Our state is going to go kicking and screaming on this stupid issue. I would rather talk about a million other things, but it just comes down to good old common sense. And I'm not going to let it go until it's done and this fight is over and we can put this stupid era behind us. But our state is not going to do anything willingly. They're never going to admit they're wrong. I mean, hell, we had Frances Stoudt on the show yesterday, who's the Tumwater High School athlete who's been fighting for fair competition for girls. And I mean, they've been trying for months now to get Chris Reichdahl, the superintendent of public instruction, and Governor Bob Ferguson and Attorney General Nick Brown to just like take a meeting with them, just hear their side of the story, and they won't.
I want to have a face-to-face conversation with them and have them call me a liar to my face. I want to see that happen, because if they feel very comfortable doing it over to the press and over screen. So I'd like to see what they have to say to me and listen to my story and listen to other girls' stories and still tell me that it isn't happening and maybe get a conversation out of it. I'd like the news outlets and media in Washington to be able to cover that. So my offer still stands today and every day.
Yeah, no. Chris Reichdahl will have a trans student introduce him at a rally to make a point, but can't be bothered to sit down with young women in public schools in the state of Washington, who have serious concerns and who've been beaten by boys. They won't do it because, I mean, what are they going to say to them? It's just wild. And I, like, look, and all, I think we should send a formal email to the governor's office about this. I've said something similar to him on social media. We can help arrange this. And I say that so genuinely. I don't have to be there. No cameras have to be there. If you just want to talk to Frances and Annalie or whoever it is in private, in your office, face to face, we are more than happy to help arrange it. And we can arrange it any time that works for your schedule. There's no reason not to unless you're just bad people. Because even if you fully believe that boys should compete against these girls, have the courage to say that to a young woman whose opportunities that you're whose opportunities you're taking away. But these people have no courage whatsoever. If they had courage, they wouldn't be on this side of the issue. All right, coming up next, renewed attacks on the initiative process in Washington state, which are attacks on democracy. Of course. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, it's really important that you become a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington for a couple reasons. One, laws and policies and regulations are changing by the day at the state level, at the local level. It can be really, really confusing to keep up with all of that, but RHA has your back. They can make sure you've got all the proper paperwork, documentation. And if you run into any problems, we know it's a tough world out there for landlords. If you run into any problems, they can help talk you through them and tell you what your options are. So it's just having someone in your corner that's really helpful. And then this time of year, they're down in Olympia advocating on your behalf and for your interests and for sane policies and to stop the bad ones. So rhawa.org, rhawa.org to become a member today. They also have a ton of events across the state going on all the time that you can be part of. Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers, rhawa.org. All right, because Democrats love democracy so much, because they want to empower citizens, they, of course, are introducing bills to attack and undermine the initiative process. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. So So there was a lot of this happening last legislative session because Let's Go Washington and Brian Haywood have figured out this initiative thing so well. They have figured it out where they can get an initiative to qualify, to go to the legislature or the voters, can do it for far less money than other people have done before and can do it far more quickly. And so they have this whole system now because they've done a few rounds of initiatives where they get mailers out to people, prepaid envelopes to send them back. They've made it very, very simple for voters to participate in the initiative process, which is protected under the state constitution. And Democrats hate it. They are terrified of Let's Go Washington and this system that they've been able to create. Why? Because that makes it easier for voters to push back against policies in Olympia. It makes it easier for voters to pass laws themselves. And Democrats, who are just drunk on power, cannot have any challenges to that power. And the initiative and referendum process right now is starting to pose a significant risk to their power and authority. So they've got to crush the dissent. They've got to undermine it in any way possible. And last session, they introduced a bunch of bills to try to do that. They also, of course, have been sending out their friends to harass and even assault signature gatherers. It's just really grotesque what's happening. So they're doing a few things this session. They're re-upping a bill from last session that would say, oh, if you don't have your proper address when you go sign one of those initiative forms, then your signature doesn't count, which is just stupid. So they're trying to do that again. But then there's this other one, matching bills in the Senate and the House. So we'll follow both of these. Senate Bill 5973 and House Bill 2259. And both of them, the only goal is to complicate the initiative process. That is absolutely the goal of these two bills, which are matching. So one of them will end up moving forward and the other one won't. It says it's an act relating to protecting the integrity of the state initiative and referendum process. Yeah, my ass. By requiring a demonstration of support before issuance of a ballot measure title and authorizing citizen actions for certain signature gatherer compensation violations. This is crazy. So this bill does a few things. I want to highlight a couple of them here. So, and the language that they choose is really grotesque. It says, to adequately guard the people's initiative and referendum right against fraud and mistake, the legislature determines that prohibiting compensation or gratuity based directly or indirectly on the number of signatures gathered is necessary. So part of what this bill wants to do is prohibit paid signature gatherers on the basis of number of signatures collected. And this has been tried before and it wasn't able to withstand court challenges. But basically, I mean, this has been, so the Let's Go Washington has been successful in these initiatives on two fronts. One is direct to mail, mailing it to people who've signed past initiatives, getting it back in the mail. And then they hire a small number of paid signature gatherers who get paid per signature. And they're very good at it. And Democrats are saying, well, in order to adequately guard the people's initiative and referendum process, we can't have people out there being paid per signature because they'll just coerce people and lie to people to get them to sign, which isn't happening. That's totally stupid. I've been out watching these paid signature gatherers throughout this process, and they are telling people the truth. They allow people to be able to read the initiative for themselves. This is just another, they're trying to take a tool away from Let's Go Washington. They're trying to take a tool away from Let's Go Washington. It's nothing else. And then they say that in order, they're saying, well, you know, we need to stop people from just filing an initiative because they just don't like an idea. We need them to demonstrate that they have enough support for that initiative or referendum before they even take the first steps. So they're saying through this law that you would have to gather at least 1,000 signatures prior to filing the proposed measure with the Secretary of State. So you would have to go out and basically do a signature gathering effort before you do a signature gathering effort. Oh yeah, and this will just help us, you know, avoid wasting resources and wasting resources with the Secretary of State's office. No, this is just adding a layer. It's adding a step to try to delay initiative gathering efforts, to try to undermine democracy. These people are so drunk on power. It's and then for them to word it as we're trying to guard the people's initiative and referendum right. If you're trying to guard it, why are you creating extra steps in order for people to participate in it? It obviously makes no sense. We see what they're doing here. The problem is every time that there's an initiative that qualifies, more likely than not going forward, it's always going to be a conservative type initiative. Because Democrats can pass anything they want through the legislature, so they don't really have to run initiatives anymore. And so they see this process as kind of the last check on their power, and they want to get rid of it entirely, but short of that, they want to make it almost impossible to do. Oh, so we'll make it harder for signatures to qualify. We'll make you have to go collect signatures before you collect signatures. We'll try to stop you from using paid signature gatherers. These people are shameless. Absolutely, positively shameless. Here's a funny thing that happened. So I was at this legislative preview last Friday, and Governor Bob Ferguson took questions from the media for 30 minutes, and he's got time for one more question, right? And he's looking around, and I know he's not going to call on me. And he ends up calling on Tim Iman, who's sitting in the front row, so funny, just throws him a bone, and Tim asks him about these bills.
Who has not asked a question? Let me ask that. Tim, all right, Happy New Year. What do you got?
Speaking of obsession, I have obsession for the initiative process, and there are a couple of bills that are going to make the signature gathering process dramatically more difficult. One of them says you have to collect 1,000 signatures before you can even approach the code revisor's office and even get a ballot title. Another one says they're going to throw out perfectly valid signatures based on the fact that the person doesn't put their address on the petition. I was curious your view on just the general concept of making the signature gathering process more difficult, not just for the people on the right, but also on the left.
So I haven't seen those bills. Happy to take a look at them. So I just want to be very clear about that. So that's number one. Number two, I think to an earlier question, some of my friends on my side of the aisle disagree with me on this, but I've always been a supporter of the initiative process, even though you and I may disagree on, you know, some of the outcomes of it. But I just think I'm okay with it, and people having a chance to weigh in, I think I'm good with. And I'm not talking about those pieces of legislation. I just do not know, so I'll be very clear. But you know, having a system that allows folks in a reasonable way to gather signatures and get to the ballot, I'm all for it. And so no idea who's proposing, no idea what they mean. But if there are proposals that are moving through the legislature, I'm sure my team and I'll be taking a close look at those to make sure that they maintain what's been around in our state for a very, very long time, right? Which is different than many states. It's a robust, you know, right? It's a robust initiative process, and I've got my strong disagreements sometimes with what goes on the ballot, for sure. But I think it's a part of our state. It's part of our state history, and that I support. So happy to take a look at those. I just don't have a specific answer right now.
I mean, kind of a cop-out, non-answer, and I'm sure he hasn't seen them. I mean, it was a couple days. The session hadn't even begun yet, so he probably hadn't seen them pre-filed, so I'll give him the benefit of the doubt on that. But okay, you're saying you support the initiative process, so that means if these bills get to your desk, you'll veto them, right? Right. Right. We'll follow up and see if they get that far, but I wanted it to be on your radar. All right, we got some national news coming up next, including a robust edition of Florida Report, Governor Ron DeSantis giving a killer State of the State address, and even taking a swipe at Washington State's tax policy in the process. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing have been awarded the best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest for 3 years in a row. And there's a few reasons for that. Their service is phenomenal. I had them come out to my house to clean my gutters, take a look at our roof after the big storms that we had in December, and they were just great. So friendly, so wonderful, so transparent with everything that they were doing, walking us through it, and then meticulous cleanup. Man, when they cleaned out our gutters, they were like, every single leaf is coming with us. And I just loved that. I was like, thank you. But also, right now, this time of year, I think a lot of people are looking at their attic insulation because you can lose up to 25% of your home's heat through your attic. So if you're furnace is working overtime, this is a great time to call Valentine, because if you bundle attic insulation with any new roof, you'll save an additional 10% off your entire project. And Valentine always has exceptional financing options that are built around your budget. So get your free estimate today by calling 206 Roofing, and make sure that you tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided with me, Brandi Cruz. Okay, let's see. I want to highlight the reporting. So it's not just Democratic leaders who are really ratcheting up the temperature when it comes to these confrontations between rioters and protesters and ICE. It's also the media, of course, in how the media chooses to frame the issue to the American people. And oftentimes they're framing it as ICE really scary and bad. So yesterday there was another shooting that happened in Minnesota. And these are the headlines. I'm going to use one from Fox 13 in Seattle, although this was an Associated Press Wire story. So other Fox affiliates across the country probably had the exact same headline. So I'm not going to blame it necessarily on Fox 13. But their post, live updates, ICE agent shoots immigrant in Minneapolis. comma, officer also hurt. ICE agent shoots immigrant in Minneapolis. Officer also hurt. And then the New York Times, breaking news, a federal agent shot an immigrant in the leg in Minneapolis 1 week after an ICE officer killed Renee Good in the city. Wow, that's pretty jarring. And they got the pictures of ICE looking like the Gestapo going door to door, evil stuff. Well, those headlines don't really capture the truth of what happened in this case. And the truth that I will say, even the Minneapolis police chief, who's proven to be a very woke political pawn, even he acknowledged the version of events that Homeland Security is talking about here that was not captured in those headlines. So Homeland Security called out the New York Times in particular and said this: "This despicably misleading headline is exactly why the American people have completely lost faith in mainstream media. This journalist knows the facts, was given the truth, and adamantly refuses to report it. Here are the facts." So they said at 6:50 in the evening, federal law enforcement officers were conducting a targeted traffic stop in Minneapolis of an illegal alien from Venezuela who was released into the country by Joe Biden in 2022. In an attempt to evade arrest, the subject fled the scene in his vehicle and crashed into a parked car. They then fled on foot. The law enforcement officer caught up to the subject on foot, attempted to apprehend him, and that's when the subject began to resist and violently assaulted the officer. While the subject and law enforcement were in a struggle on the ground, two other people came out of a nearby apartment and also attacked the law enforcement officer with a snow shovel and a broom handle. As the officer was being ambushed and attacked by the two individuals, the original suspect got loose and began striking the officer with a shovel. Fearing for his life and safety, the officer fired a defensive shot, hit the illegal alien in the leg. All three of the subjects ran back into the apartment complex, barricaded themselves inside. So the attacked officer and the subject, who was eventually arrested, are both were sent to the hospital, and both the other attackers were taken into custody. And again, that's not just Homeland Security's version of events. The Minneapolis police chief, total woke lefty, also confirmed that the ICE agent was attacked. But you, if you read and just glance over the headline of the coverage, which that's what so many people do, it's clearly meant to incite this feeling. I mean, that Fox 13 headline, ICE agent shoots immigrant in Minneapolis. It's like, no, this was an illegal alien from Venezuela who fled and then beat the ICE agent with a shovel with help from two friends. It's just crazy. And after, I will say, after DHS called out the New York Times, the New York Times changed its headline slightly, but it still is very inflammatory. It says, federal agent shoots man in Minneapolis, prompting tense protests. That's still horrible. But then in the subhead, at least, they said, the agent shot a Venezuelan man who was resisting arrest, an official said. Protesters and law enforcement officers clashed for hours as city officials urged people to go home. They added that little, but still, it's horrible still. And the picture, oh my God, and it's like the agent shot a Venezuelan man who was resisting arrest. He wasn't just resisting arrest. He was beating him with a snow shovel with the help of two other people. I'm sorry,
that
the media.
Picture makes it look like it was an execution.
I know, doesn't it look like it was a firing squad?
Yep.
Yep, we shot this person. What kind of picture is that to use? Absolutely wild. I mean, the media is, if there's a civil war, the media will be the primary culprit of that civil war. And we know what side they'll be cheering for. All right, let's skip this next story and go straight to Florida Report today. Maybe we can look into that a little more next week, or we might come back to it. But a lot going on in Florida. And I cannot help but point out the differences between the state of the state for our governor here and the state of the state for Ron DeSantis in Florida. So Miranda joins us to talk a little bit about that and other stories out of the Sunshine State.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
We were getting on and getting ready, and you said, I'm trying to cover my shirt. And I said, why? It's a Sauron shirt. Why on earth would you ever want to cover that? That makes you look so cool.
I guess I was just trying to be more professional, but no. I guess you're right.
Professionalism here on Undivided goes out the window quite often. So fair. No big deal. All right. I got to start with this really quick. And then we got to get to this banger of a state of the state address that DeSantis gave. But we talked a lot today about ICE, sanctuary cities and states, Governor Walz in Minnesota, encouraging people to harass ICE agents and then complaining when there's, incidents where ICE agents have to shoot someone who's assaulting them. So Florida is obviously much different. They are all in on having local law enforcement and the state troopers there help ICE, help facilitate ICE's efforts. So this is a great tweet from the Attorney General of Florida. Go ahead.
This tweet says, this is Jennifer Cruz of Jacksonville.
No relation. Jennifer, hold on. No relation. Go ahead.
It's spelled C-R-U-Z. So yeah, no relation. Jennifer disagrees with immigration enforcement and decided to commit a few felonies by getting out of her car and punching a trooper in the face. But unlike Minnesota, we don't put up with this nonsense. Not today, Jennifer.
Not today, Jennifer. I love that. And it's like, why would you not? Instead, they send ICE, you know, ICE is still going to do its job in places like Minnesota. And now they're out there completely on their own and have basically had the populace spun up into a rage and sicked on them by the governor. And then you think police and state patrol are going to come in there and help them? No, they're prevented and prohibited from doing so as they are in Washington state. So yeah. I love to see this and the look on her face. She's still very proud of herself, actually.
She is. Yeah. She looks like she's having a good time. But, you know, she's having a good time because we don't put up with that. So she didn't get killed. You know, she's just going to go to jail and probably spend some time there.
Yeah. So hopefully that smirk was wiped off her face as soon as she was booked into county. All right. So our governor gave his State of the State address where he just went full TDS and all of that stuff. This is the last State of the State for Governor DeSantis. Is that correct?
Yes, don't make me sad.
I know. I don't think we're done with him yet. I think that the Lord probably has other plans for him. But let's play a couple. Why don't you intro these clips that you thought we should play today?
So he started off his State of the State address with this really just great kind of conversation about how this is what our founding fathers intended America to be like and how Florida has strived to be a model of that intention.
Great, let's play it.
The founding fathers were students of history. They studied the history of every republic that had ever existed. They recognized the common thread that united the experience of each and every one of those prior republics. And it was simply this: every one of them had failed. The founders believe, in the words of Alexander Hamilton, that it fell to the United States of America to determine whether societies of men are really capable or not of establishing good government from reflection and choice, or whether they're forever destined to depend on their political constitutions on accident and force. These were big questions. Could people actually govern themselves? Could a nation based on natural, God-given rights long endure? Could government power be successfully limited by the rule of law and a written constitution? Or was mankind destined to live under various forms of despotism? The United States was founded to be that last best hope on earth, to be the country that would, once and for all, answer those questions.
Yeah, and some days I do still feel like that experiment hangs in the balance, but then you see leaders like that and in Florida and what they're trying to do, and you really do sense, I mean, there's obviously a huge difference between the State of the State that our governor gave, which is all about growing the size of government and government control and government power and nothing about freedom whatsoever. Yeah. And then you hear from DeSantis. So,
yeah, no, I love it. And he's such like a true blooded American. And I think he makes that so like prominent. And every time he speaks, he talks about the founding fathers and what America's supposed to be. And I love that he's been a little extreme at times, but I do think he's generally very rooted in the values of what America is supposed to be. And I just love hearing him speak like that.
Yeah. So another point of differentiation that will play here. So, of course, our governor got up and he talked about the new income tax that they're going to push through. And then Governor DeSantis said this.
In the past 7 years, Florida has attracted more income than any other state has ever attracted over a similar period of time in the entire history of the United States of America. We continue to lead the nation in new business formations year after year, and one of the reasons we do that is because we are friendly to the taxpayers. Over the past 7 years, we have delivered a record of almost $10 billion in tax relief. We do not and will never have an income tax in the Sunshine State.
I feel like that was directly aimed at us.
It felt like that when I listened to it. I instantly was like, I feel like he listened to your governor's speech and was like, I'm going to do the opposite.
Yeah, well, he's commented on. He made several, I think we talked about it on Florida Report last week. He's commented on the proposed income tax here and is basically like, okay, this is what's going to happen. They're all going to come to Florida, so enjoy that. So I bet that was really a response to what we're proposing here. All right, let's do one legislative item from the Florida State Legislature. It has to do with AI, something I think really should be non-controversial.
Yeah, I expect this to be nonpartisan once it hits the floor. But basically, a bill was proposed that would require like students in public schools at the fifth grade level to start learning about AI, how to use it, how to create it, and how to tell what is AI and what's not.
How to detect it. Very smart. Yeah. And I mean, we have, I'm not going to say who, but people in our family who literally just need to log off the internet because I don't believe that they're able to detect AI. I mean, right now, to me, AI is pretty obvious. But in a month, even in 6 months, in a year, I don't know. You're going to have to really use tools to be able to decipher fact from fiction. And I think it makes total sense to be able to help kids understand that as they come of age.
And also not just understand it, but our future is AI. Our future is moving in that direction, whether it's AI-generated knowledge, AI-generated statistics, or AI-generated content. It also just opens up learning for career possibilities in the future for kids, too. So
100%. Yeah. Can we harness the power, or will the power harness us? That is the question of this generation. All right, Miranda, great stuff. Keep an eye on the Florida legislature for us as we keep an eye on our legislature here, compare and contrast in Florida reports to come. We will talk to you later.
Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Yeah, I mean, that was totally a DeSantis swipe at Washington State. You know that if they pass an income tax here, so many people are going to go to Florida. I think Washington State's losing almost 30 taxpayers per minute while Florida's gaining them at a rapid clip. So a lot of differentiation there. All right, coming up next week to our daily subscriber show poll and then roll on into comments. First, I get so many wonderful stories from you guys about First Mark Insurance. And I know why, because I'm a member of the First Mark family and I'm literally obsessed with them. First of all, I just love them because every email I get from them is like, how are you? How's your family? How's your dogs? And it just feels good to be working with someone who knows what's going on with my family. And I'll give you guys an update on my little doggy maybe later on. It's very sad. No, she's alive, but it was just a rough night for her. Anyway, back to First Mark, firstmarkinsurance.com. I'm going to get an email one day from Dave Taylor with First Mark saying, hey, you know, you go off on these tangents all the time and the ad reads. And yesterday you were spending a lot of time talking about your dog. Well, you were supposed to be, you know, running an advertisement for us, but
it's
okay. I don't
think I'll get an email.
I don't either. I think the Taylors also love dogs. Connie Knox says, I'm very impressed with First Mark. I learned about them through watching Brandy Cruz. That's me. On Facebook, and I was looking for a different car insurance company, so I made the call. I received an email from Chase, and he was able to save me a considerable amount of money on my car insurance. Chase is very easy to work with. No high-pressure sales, ever. Other than some phone difficulties, I would recommend First Mark to my friends and family. In fact, I already have. Not sure what the phone difficulties were, but sounds like she figured it out. I had phone difficulties yesterday. Maybe that's what she was referring to. I had no service like all day from Verizon. It was crazy. Anyway, back to firstmarkinsurance.com. firstmarkinsurance.com. Become a member of the First Mark family like Connie did and like so many undivided viewers and listeners have, including me and my family. firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind. All right, in our daily subscriber show poll, exclusive to paid subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, I asked you guys about the possibility that President Trump might use the Insurrection Act in Minnesota to assist ICE agents in carrying out their duties without fear of being mobbed by violent leftists. Nicole, with today, given the circumstances today, not what might may come, but today, would you support President Trump using the Insurrection Act?
Gosh, it's getting close.
Getting real close.
I mean, I would try to put it off as long as possible. So maybe not today, but we're getting there.
Tomorrow?
He gave the warning today.
Yeah.
If things don't diffuse over the weekend, then I definitely think we're heading in that direction.
I gotta say, it's hard for me because I am a limited government kind of person. Mm-hmm. The answer today is yes. Mm-hmm. And if Democrats called what happened on J6 an insurrection, how can you not consider this an insurrection? That's quite literally what the Insurrection Act is made for. And if you had, if it was a scenario where you had rioters going out on their own, taking matters into their own hands, and it was private citizens who were causing all this chaos, that would be different, but it is truly elected leaders and the highest elected official in the state of Minnesota who's directing it and who's not condemning it. And through that, condoning it. So I do believe, given the violence that we've seen occur, that it is time to have troops come in to assist agents in carrying out the law. Now, will that make things worse?
Escalate, yes.
Probably. Mm-hmm. But what do you do? It's already escalating. 80% of you said yes, that you believe it is time in Minnesota for the president. And I have family in Minnesota who already hate the president, and I imagine that they would lose their ever-loving minds. Over on Locals, which I think is a little more conservative of our subscriber base, 66% say yes. UF88 on Locals said, absolutely, this violence needs to stop. I want to see nightsticks, fire hoses, and police dogs. Oh, gosh, maybe not some of that. But, you know, fire hoses, I think, are an underestimated tool. They just have this bad rap because, you know, they used to use them on black people, which is obviously horrible. And we have some horrible history with that in our country. But, you know, I would rather get hit with a fire hose than I would get hit with pepper spray. Pepper spray and the OC spray is horrible. And granted, I've never been hit with a fire hose. But
well, in the Minnesota cold.
Oh, freeze ya. Freeze ya right on contact. Let's see. Cap Tom, responses to rhetoric are escalating. Time for someone to take a step back and try to get this on a more productive level. Sending in troops only hardens one side's opposition. I would like to see them try de-escalating and removing ICE as a gesture. If the response is counterproductive, then reintroduce. But then the rioters get what they want. Removing ICE that's doing a job, is that not then giving in? It's basically like negotiating with terrorists. So I don't know about that. Winton, Brandy, Democrats think this is how they win the midterms and how they win back the White House. Sitting in Europe with my popcorn, waiting to see how this plays out. Well, I don't know, because Winton, last I checked, I think, don't you live in, like, London or something? In London, you can get arrested for posting the wrong thing on social media. So they freak me out over there. Dan, one more here. 100% sanctuary cities and states are actively rebelling against the USA. But then you always look at a tool in the hands of your worst enemy. And how would an AOC use the Insurrection Act, you know? And it really freaks me out. All right, get to some comments from our brilliant viewers. Mm-hmm. On Mayor Katie Wilson canceling the sweep in Ballard, SSR's Garage says, but if the politicians don't allow problems to fester, how can they run on fixing them, LOL? Yeah, you have to have problems in order to run for office. True point. T8858, when I get more space, I'll take a photo of a tent compound by me. Has a garden and Christmas decorations everywhere. When you get more space, did you run out of space on your phone? Maybe that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, he must have. Yeah, that's funny.
Must have. You get a necro two shoes.
Make more space on my phone. I got to clear. Yes,
I have to do that all the time. It's usually pictures of my dogs and I've got to delete them. We had a terrible night with Lucky last night. She had to go back to the vet. She was bleeding from her incision and she was yelping in pain and it was a horrible thing. Oh, poor Mike hasn't slept for a second night in a row. She can't go to the bathroom. She won't go to the bathroom. She pooped on her floor, which was the first, well, it wasn't even poop. It was like a liquidy thing. Sorry. It's been a really hard day. It's been hard. And I just my best friend.
Okay. What she did on your floor.
Sorry. Okay. Sorry. Apologize. Necro Two Shoes, look at all those happy liberals exercise enthusiasts ignoring the problem they created. Yeah, it's all those happy joggers on the Burke Gilman Trail going past this horrible homeless encampment. They're probably like, oh, I can't wait to vote for another Democrat.
Right. You
know? Rob Dow.
They do look quite content.
Yes. With all the construction and new laws to help people, they should send them to rehabilitation for their drug addiction and get a roof over their heads while learning, working, and confined to pay for their treatment until they can manage themselves in society again. If they can't reform, they keep working, getting treatment, and providing a service for their care. I don't hate that. On Trump renewing his threat against sanctuary cities, Old Sub Sailor, President Trump needs to take overwhelming military action to squash the insurrection. The far-left militants are well-organized and openly advocating for the overthrow of the government. This is a communist movement. It's so hard whenever you talk about putting troops on American streets. And I totally get that. And I am not, I don't want to be flippant about it. But how much worse do you allow it to get? You know, for instance, I thought in 2020 that they should have had troops on the streets of Minneapolis with the widespread rioting and burning and looting. And they didn't do it then. And we're not to that level yet, but it's a different issue as well. Lil Miss J, he is feeding the extreme leftists. We are seeing a major surge in their recruiting efforts too. Tim is pushing for our country's destruction. I'm just still hopeful that he'll resign, that at some point the fraud thing will come back to him and he'll resign. But I don't know if the lieutenant governor would be any better, who told people to put their bodies on the line and in front of ICE.
Right. And I think this is a party problem right now. I mean, all of them are just calling for this kind of destruction, and they obviously don't care about anybody's safety, or they would say, chill. And let's work this out in court. No, let's work this out wherever.
They want them to be killed. They want to make a point against Trump for the midterms. They literally want people to die so they can win the midterms. I mean that with every fiber of my being. Dems introducing bills to attack the initiative process. Cindy Essick, these politicians are so out of touch with the people. William, funny they don't want voter ID, but they do want to limit and restrain opposition.
Oh, of course. And like I said yesterday, Ferguson in his State of the State was all about science.
Yes.
But no, not about not science when home. It comes to the sciences
not
we
that
talk about.
Science. Not that science.
Only certain sciences.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, AOC would use the Insurrection Act to try to force trans kids to compete with girls. Like, keep, you know, it's just crazy. Media lying on the ICE shooting. Lil Miss J with a $10 super chat. Thank you. Moore would understand also how these leftists are not seeing the full stories on many of these events. Many are in a bubble of their own making, and it's driving them further over the edge. I have family members like that, who that algorithm is absolutely indoctrinating them.
Feeding them.
And you have to break. I have to do this all the time. And I'm not saying I'm like smarter or more in touch, but I have to consume media for a living. We both do. Mm-hmm. And so one, it has to be accurate to go on the show. And so we already have that instilled in us, right? To double check things. But I have to break free from my algorithm all the time, where I'm like, holy smokes, this thing is feeding me what it knows is going to piss me off today.
Yeah.
And you really have to understand that and just put the phone down. Let's do one more here. Nancy Campbell on the Minneapolis police chief telling the truth about what happened with the shooting there. The chief sees the writing on the wall and he knows what's coming. Probably wants to avoid it. Last thing we need is...
he doesn't want his guys...
No, fighting with the feds, fighting. Like literally in a shootout or something. I don't even know. I know I'm being hyperbolic with the Civil War thing, but am I?
It's getting crazy.
I just want to be seen as useful, because in a real Civil War, they'll just dispense of you if you're not useful. I want to be seen as useful.
Well, you're becoming a pretty good cook.
I am. I've been cooking a lot more. Man, I made a dumpling soup the other day. I can make dumpling soup for the masses.
Yeah.
Please don't dispense of me in the Civil War. Can't shoot a gun for crap, but you know, I can be of use in other ways. All right, Nicole, thank you so much. We'll get to our closing sanity check in a moment. First, if you are even thinking at the early stages of selling your home, you probably need to get an earlier start than you even imagine, especially in this market right now, because most homes need a little more work put into them before they can really stand out on the market and amongst other listings. And Wes Jones and his team specialize in that. Like, for instance, if you need some cosmetic upgrades, he's going to come in, tell you which upgrades are worth it, that you'll get the money from on the back end, which can help you sell your home faster and for a higher dollar. And he can help manage those projects and even make sure you don't have to pay for them until closing. It's called his Listing Boost Concierge Service. So if that's something that would be a benefit to you, and especially if you've like already moved and are trying to sell your home back in Washington State, or you're trying to sell a family member's home, you're not in the area, Wes is really the guy to go to, because he's going to be able to take care of all of it for you. Mark said, we had to sell my mom's house and it needed a little bit of prep, new carpet, paint, yard work. None of us live nearby. And Wes and Erica and the team took care of it all. We got asking price and sold the very first weekend. He said, very smooth experience, just what I was hoping for. And we hear so many stories like that about our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com, it really just is a better way to sell your home. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Da, da, da. I love this clip. I meant to play it yesterday, but I forgot about it, so we're going to play it today. So some of these ICE agents really are having the time of their lives, and they feel supported by the federal government, and they're out there doing a job that they think is really important. So there's this funny clip out of Minneapolis where this ICE agent is being confronted by some protest rioter or whatever it is, and the ICE agent's response is fantastic.
I don't care what they told you. If you guys get in my way, I will arrest you.
Sir, we're just observing. Please calm down.
You can observe all you want.
I am observing. Do you see me in the way? I am back.
You had anger issues as a kid, didn't you? Were your parents present? You should be ashamed of yourself, man.
He is.
I love my job. Thank you.
You love your job?
I can't believe I get paid for this.
Really?
I do this for free.
Really, I get $200K. I'm a physician assistant.
How long did you go to school for that?
Over 7 years.
I went to high school. I make $200K.
I love this job. I do it for free. Oh, well, I'm a physician's assistant. I make $200,000 a year. I went to high school. I make $200,000 a year. You went to school for 7 years. That is absolute gold. It's hilarious. All right, we have a great episode of Sundays with Subscribers coming up this week. You remember the story we did, was it earlier this week, about this Mara Mahan, the research assistant at the University of Washington, who said that me and anyone who questions whether boys or girls deserves to be assassinated. Well, we're waiting to see what the university does and whether they allow that kind of behavior. But meanwhile, we're going to talk to another University of Washington staff member who was relentlessly harassed and retaliated against for doing something that doesn't even come close to wishing assassination on his political enemies. So he's going to join us on this episode of Sundays with Subscribers. So thank you for being here for today's episode. Thank you so much for your support of our show. A special thank you to our paid subscribers. You help make the show possible. We wouldn't have a show without you. So if you'd like to become a paid subscriber, help us grow, help our reach grow, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, click on the banner that says support the show for $5. And then you also get to participate in our daily subscriber show polls. You get to watch our episodes of Sundays with Subscribers, and then you just get to feel good about yourself, that you're sticking it to stupid outlets like the Seattle Times by supporting us instead. Doesn't that feel nice? UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. We will see the rest of you back here on Monday. Subscribers, we will see you on Sunday.